This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Recent books by and about wise guys turned informants have given us inside views into organized crime. The new book, Mob Girl, tells about one woman's life in the underworld. Mob Girl is the story of Arlene Brickman. She was connected to the mob by blood, her father was a racketeer, by sex, her many lovers were wise guys, and by her work, she ran a bookmaking operation. In the mid-70s, for reasons of fear, revenge, and power, she became an informant for the police and the FBI. In 1988, at the age of 54, Brickman started looking for a writer to tell her story in a book. She chose my guest, Teresa Carpenter, a former crime reporter for The Village Voice. Carpenter's investigation into the murder of Playboy playmate Dorothy Stratton won a Pulitzer Prize and was adapted into the film Star 80. When agreeing to work with Brickman, Teresa Carpenter made it clear she would function as a journalist, not a ghostwriter. Reading Carpenter's book, you reach the conclusion that the way for a woman to have power in the mob is to have sex with men in the mob.
The way for a woman to gain power in the underworld is to do favors for wise guys, to do favors for bosses, crew chiefs, and among those favors, of course, is sex. There are other favors they do, primarily running errands, serving as couriers for hot gyms, for drugs. And Arlene performed all manner of favors, but among them, of course, was a great deal of sex.
Was she sexually attracted to dangerous men?
Oh, yes, primarily to dangerous men. As you know, she grew up New York's Lower East Side, among Jewish racketeers. Her father was a racketeer. Her grandmother was extremely interesting and flamboyant character who ran a funeral parlor, which was also a hangout for a gang of called the Clinton Street Boys. Arlene never found the Jewish mob she grew up in as dangerous and hence as erotically appealing as the Italian wise guys who were just a block over. And so when she reached her late teen years, actually in her early teen years, she developed a passion for the Italian hoods that lasted for a good 20 years.
Mob girl is a word that Arlene Brickman used to use to describe herself when she was talking to you. What did she mean by that expression?
Well, her own definition of a mob girl, she differentiated among types of mob girls. She said, you know, there are mob girls who hang out with one guy and they're connected to a crew. There are mob girls who go from man to man, wise guy to wise guy, receiving along the way gifts and presents and nice dinners. And then at the apex of this hierarchy of mob girls was, of course, Virginia Hill, who was Arlene's idol. And she was, in Arlene's own words, a broad who really made it good.
So where did Arlene fit in these different categories of mob girl?
Well, Arlene certainly enjoyed a more distinguished career than the throng of anonymous mob girl who goes from man to man and then is eventually a burnout because of drugs or disease or whatever. Arlene seemed to be more purposeful in her selection of men. It's strange to use the term career-oriented when you're talking about someone in this lifestyle, but you know, she was very proud of sleeping with name wise guys, Tony Mira among them, Joe Colombo. I mean, this later on when she turned informant and went to work for the government, she would reel off the names of the men she'd slept with as more or less a resume, which it was in both the underworld and in the world of law enforcement.
You describe how she lost her virginity when she was 12, and she didn't much like the sex, but she loved the attention. Do you think that that helped lead her into the life that she chose?
Yes, I think Arlene recognized early on that sex was a commodity. It was a means of of gaining access to power. I don't believe she ever enjoyed sex that much. She certainly had plenty of it, but she knew that she could use sex to control, she could use sex to get attention, she could use sex to get favors, and she used it liberally.
And also, sex was used against her sometimes as punishment. For instance, she walked in on a hit when she was young, and her punishment or her blackmail was that she had to have sex with the hitman and with his friends. Otherwise, they might have hurt her so that she wouldn't squeal on them. But, you know, this is what she had to do instead.
Yes, and I think that was a moment of revelation for her. She was quite young when this happened, in her late teens. And to that point, she'd been active for sexually active for two or three years, but she had always been under the impression that she was the one in control. And, in fact, she realized then that she wasn't in control, that these men were holding all the high cards. And it precipitated a breakdown where she, became depressed and had actually been taken to a therapist by her parents, who didn't know what was happening until the therapist managed to get it out of her.
I realize this might sound like we're trying to get pretty lurid about her sex life, but I find it a really very interesting demonstration of how men held women in check, and the one power that she seemed to have as a woman within this group was sexual.
Exactly. That again, an ability to serve as a courier for messages, and she served as a confidant as well, but I think, a mob girl's chief function is to look good, to be a showpiece in a gangster's arm, and essentially to service him sexually.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good illustration of a very, very sexist world.
Oh, that's putting it mildly.
Yes. I think Arlene Brickman's greatest moment of betrayal was when she was gang-raped by men who she thought were her buddies. She thought they were all on the same team, and she realized they weren't.
Yes. One thing that Arlene craved ever since she was a teenager was to be included in her father's circle, or in the circle of the Italian wise guy she hung out with. She really wanted to be one of the boys, to have the kind of respect that the men showed one another. And she had deluded herself into believing that through doing these favors, sexual and otherwise, that she was held in respect, that they felt genuine affection for her, that if she was in trouble, they would come to her defense. But one night, she got into trouble at a bar in Midtown, found herself trapped in a basement and was brutally raped by three wise guys. The rape itself, of course, was traumatic, but what followed was, for Arlene, I think, the most traumatic experience of her career in the underworld. She called on every powerful wise guy she knew, including the late Tony Mara and Funzi Masca, to come to her defense and to punish those who had assaulted her, and they did nothing. And they professed to be sorry about what had happened. They said they would look into it, and then nothing happened. And I think at that point she realized the lowly status that she really held in this society of mob figures.
So how did that change where she saw her place in the mob?
Well, I think in the book I described it as the end of innocence, and I think if there's anything that predisposed her toward turning informant in later years, and that occurred a few years down the road, it was that moment, the moment of the rape or the subsequent realization that she wasn't one of the boys.
She wanted to be a businesswoman in the mob as well. How far did she get in that?
Well, she was running a fairly successful bookmaking operation. First in Queens and then in Fort Lee, New Jersey. She was, that was actually her first and last arrest. She was busted, and that more or less brought her action to a close. But, there were She was supervising a number of runners, and she had some business acumen. There's no question about it.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Teresa Carpenter. She's a journalist whose new book is the true story of Arlene Brickman. The book is called Mob Girl, and it's the true story of a woman who was in the mob and then became an informant on the mob. We'll take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Teresa Carpenter is my guest, and we're talking about her new book, Mob Girl, A Woman's Life in the Underworld. How did Arlene Brickman become an informant on the mob?
Well, it began after the arrest. She fell into a strange kind of friendship with her arresting officers in Fort Lee. And they saw that she had rather extensive ties with New York crime families, among them the Genovese. And they cultivated her little by little. You know, they would call her, she would call them. Just to talk, nothing serious. Simultaneously, she found herself getting deeper and deeper in debt with loan sharks. And at one point, the loan sharks threatened her daughter, Leslie, the daughter by the marriage to Brickman. The girl was then in her early teens. And that was really the catalyst or the turning point. She went to the two policemen who had originally arrested her and said that she would be willing to cooperate if they would get the loan sharks off her back and protect her daughter.
When she decided to cooperate and become an informant, what was her technique for getting information?
She was very brazen. In fact, every police officer who worked with her, every federal agent I talked to was astounded by her audacity. She was not at all shy. You know, she wore wires for the government starting in Fort Lee. In fact, starting with the case in which she originally went to the Fort Lee police, they then went to the FBI and they wired her up to talk to these guys. And she was impressively courageous. One thing I learned in talking to law enforcement is that when they wire an informant, or even when they send one of their own men or women in, the thing they want that operative to do is to press, to pursue, to ask the second or third question. And often they can't get them to do that because that's very dangerous. If you appear too inquisitive, you are literally putting your life in danger. Arlene seemed utterly oblivious to the danger she was in. She would press, she would probe, she would ask the second, third, fourth question. And of course, the federal agents and the strike force prosecutor who was working with her were delighted when they saw the transcripts or they listened to the tapes, because this is just the sort of specificity that they needed to make the case against these fellows. So as an operative, she was extremely successful.
She wore a wire for about 10 years, right?
Off and on, yes, for
that's a really
number of agencies. Quite a while. And one of the questions I had of both her and law enforcement was how could she continue working without being found out? I mean, it seems like the underworld would gossip would travel pretty rapidly there, and she would get a reputation as an informant. But it seems like I'm to this day not quite sure why Arlene gets away with all she gets away with. Part of it is her audacity. Part of it is that she appears ingenuous and dotty at times that you think she couldn't possibly be a threat. It's amazing. I mean, it's her bravado, I think, that keeps her safe.
Most mobsters who turn against their colleagues and inform end up in the Federal Witness Protection Program. She chose to not join the program, and she's just, living in hiding without the protection that the feds can offer her. Why didn't she take them up on the offer to join the protection program?
Well, she was offered the program repeatedly and each time turned it down. The reason being that if you accept the protection of the federal marshals, you have to live a fairly restrictive lifestyle. And for one thing, you can't commit crimes. You have to take the job that they arrange for you. You have to live where they set you up. You can't have any contact with your former associates or family. And until recently, Arlene's mother was living, and she couldn't imagine a world in which she couldn't call her mother 4 or 5 times a day. I think she just realized she couldn't live under those strictures and chose to protect herself.
If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist Teresa Carpenter, and we're talking about her new book, Mob Girl, A Woman's Life in the Underworld. Since Arlene Brickman was a con woman and you wanted to check out everything that she told you, what was it like fact-checking her stories? You had to go to the mob and ask them, is it true that you raped her? Or is it true that you sold drugs with her? I mean, how do you fact-check this
stuff?
It's
very difficult. Very difficult indeed. A number of the characters she was involved with had extensive criminal records. And, in the instances she wore wires, of course, there were public documents, transcripts of the wires that she wore, which bore out her story. I spoke with, a family maid who was, of course, loyal to Arlene, but she nonetheless, confirmed to my satisfaction a number of the things that occurred in Arlene's early life. Talked with Arlene's mother and daughter, both of whom died during the course of my research. But I found Arlene's account of events to be extremely accurate. And I think it was because this book meant a lot to her. This was not just another con. She was approaching her middle 50s at the time she decided to do it. I mean, she saw it more or less as the final chronicle of her life, something that would vindicate her life. And so she made it a point to be candid, extremely candid.
In your introduction to Mob Girl, you write that because manipulation was Arlene Brickman's art, that you knew that she was trying to manipulate you. How did she try to manipulate you, and were you able to get, how did you get beyond that?
Well, I knew that she was presenting a side of herself to me that she didn't present, for instance, to her mobster friends or the government. I mean, Arlene is very shrewd in reading expectations. When she goes into a room, she sits down to answer questions. She'll try to see exactly what it is that you want from her in terms of a personality. And I think when she met me, she figured the tough girl persona wasn't going to play. And so she assumed the pose, I won't even say it's a pose because it's a legitimate part of her personality, but the aspect of Yenta, the kind of doting Jewish mother. And that's more or less the pattern that we fell into over the years that I did this book. There were other Arlenes I saw during that time. There was the demure little Arlene, which I imagine played very well when she was younger and an active mob girl. There was the provocative, even abusive Arlene. But for the most part, it was the Yenta.
Do you think that the mob will ever be changed by feminism? It's one part of our society that has seemed to be resistant to it and immune to it so far.
I would say not. The mob itself seems to be taking some serious hits, and there's a question as to whether organized crime, as we now know it, will even survive. But I don't know that the mob would be reformed or even be made better by being feminized. That would, in fact, never happen. I mean, it is just such an unremittingly male and abusive male bastion that simply could never happen.
What did you find most revelatory in all the research you did for your book?
Well, I was disabused of certain romantic notions about the mob. As I mentioned earlier, most of what we get, certainly most of the information I got was from popular media, movies, books. You know, I very much enjoyed the Godfather trilogy. I certainly enjoyed Bugsy. I thought Goodfellas was wonderful movie making. But basically, these are fairy tales. They present the mob. You know, no, they're. The violence would tend to lead you to believe that it's a gritty, accurate portrayal of a lifestyle. But in fact, the underlying premise of those films in particular is that, you know, no matter how violent they are with one another, they're still men of honor. That simply is not the case. I mean, these are vain, callow, often homicidal narcissists. I mean, Bugsy Siegel and Virginia Hill alone. I mean, if you take those two, Bugsy was... a homicidal sociopath, and Virginia was a glorified call girl. But we prefer somehow to think of them as these romantic figures. And but the, going back to your original question, you know, the most revelatory thing to me was to see how crudely and crassly opportunistic people in this world are. You know, and Arlene is certainly one of those people.
How do you think Arlene Brookman would have told her story differently from the way you told it?
I think it would have come across more as we saw Virginia Hill in the movie Bugsy. You know, the fact of the matter is there were glamorous aspects to the life. You know, Arlene got jewels. She received furs. She enjoyed the company of powerful men. When she went in to a restaurant on their arm, they got the best tables. They were given preferential treatment everywhere they went, I mean, as long as they were in neighborhoods where those characters were recognized. You know, it was exhilarating, particularly for a young girl, to run with that crowd. I think Arlene sees her entire life through that kind of rosy filter of glamour. You know, I think that I had more perspective on her life, hearing the same facts that she was rendering to me. I mean, it's on the surface, you know, is a glamorous life, but beneath it, it's very brutal.
Well, Teresa Carpenter, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Teresa Carpenter is the author of Mob Girl, A Woman's Life in the Underworld. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.